Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you from the English service of The Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clote in Washington, D.C. A Malawian civil society group mobilizes farmers to picket government offices beginning Monday.
As I'm talking to you now, government has not procured even a single bag of fertilizer. The fertilizer you've seen in the pictures, you have seen going around the farming community redeeming, it is from the donor community.
A women's advocacy group calls on the Zambian government to appoint more women to decision-making positions.
If you look at the country, we have signed a lot of protocols, international laws that compel member states to have 50% representation. But if you look at Zambia, we are still very far.
And youth advocates call on Nigeria's Independent National Electoral Commission, or INEC, to help people with disabilities cast their ballot.
The electoral act needs to go beyond its theoretical form to implementation. And that means persons with disability needs to be at the core front of the electoral observation, as well as becoming electoral voters. They need to as well vote.
Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. Convicted Ivorian soldiers who were pardoned by the military junta in Mali have safely arrived in Ivory Coast. Local media reports President Alassane Ouattara was there to welcome all 46 soldiers home. The soldiers were detained in Mali on June 22nd after the junta accused them of undermining Mali's security and conspiracy against the administration in Bamako. They were subsequently convicted. But analysts say representatives of the Economic Community of West African State, or ECOWAS, played a key role in the release of the convicted Ivorian soldiers. For more on reaction to the pardon and release of the Ivorian soldiers, I reach Dramani Soare. He is a television host of the English language show in Mali called English Time.
We have to remind people that Mali and Ivory Coast is kind of friendship since a while. There is a historical partnership and friendship between us. So this decision coming from the president of the transition, His Excellency Assimi Goïta, proved to the audience and all international partners that we really care, we really think about our partners, and also kind of willing and kind of social humanitarian that he decided to graduate those soldiers. And the Malian population, they do appreciate, they're expecting from this decision. And as you can understand now, they were only respecting the law. So they really wait for the law to take the decision about them. So after the decision now, it belongs to the president now to decide. So, and then definitely, yeah, decide and also respond to the expectation from the population.
Did the president explain the reason behind the decision to release these convicted soldiers?
Yeah, if you can see the post from the presidency, they make a great communique that they explain exactly how the process goes through. And even if they send a message and prove the international community that the ECOWAS, also the rule of ECOWAS in this different magician, they explain exactly why, what was the main rule of ECOWAS, and also the mediator from, let's say, Togo, from this, this negotiation. And they, of course, they explain to the population about why they have done it. They could have not, released them first and paramount without making the justice, and also without taking account the different aspects regarding to these issues, which is the Ivorian soldiers here in Mali.
how do you see the relationship between Ivory Coast and Mali going forward following the release of these detained or convicted soldiers from Ivory Coast?
Yeah, I think the relationship is going to be more strengthened because, of course, it's political issues. Kind of the message to share that despite whatever happened here in Mali and from Mali and Ivory Coast, they remain the same country. And also is a message that the president wants to share to the international community that no one else could take any decisions in our place. We have to take our own responsibility, to take our own decision regarding to the interest about our country and also interest about our population. I do believe that also is the same from also Ivory, let's say Ivorians. They also will be very happy to this decision. So very significant decision that will be strengthened our different relationship in terms of political, in terms of also, let's say, in terms of political and also social and educational science. All those aspects are also gathering through these decisions. If you can understand, before they release the women who were inside part of these soldiers, so since that one, we can see the willing of the president of the transition that he doesn't want it to, complicate more this situation. That's why I've been released and, taking account is right to release those soldiers.
Dramani Soare is the television host of the only English show in Mali called English Time. He spoke with me from the Malian capital, Bamako. In Malawi, a civil society group called the Center for Democracy Economic Development Initiatives is mobilizing farmers to picket government offices beginning Monday. The move, the group says, aims to pressure the administration in Lilongwe to provide fertilizer to farmers to produce food to reduce hunger and poverty. The civil society group is also calling on President Lazarus Chakwera to fire agricultural minister for failing to ensure fertilizer deliveries. It says the Tonse Alliance government must keep its electoral promises to voters. For more on the planned protest, I reach Sylvester Namiwa. He is the executive director for the Center for Democracy Economic Development Initiatives.
As I'm talking to you now, the staple food, which is maize, has gone past the time when it requires the first fertilizer, that is NPK. But mind you, government, through the National Assembly, has set aside 188 billion meant for the procurement of fertilizer in that program known as Affordable Input Program. As I'm talking to you now, government has not procured even a single bag of fertilizer. The fertilizer you have seen in the pictures, you have seen going around the farming community redeeming, it is from the donor community, that is including the donation, the 10,000 metric tons we got from the Kingdom of Morocco. Now, we gave the president 48 hours to give us a status report of the AIP, but now almost 24 hours have elapsed. There is no response. We also demanded that the Minister of Agriculture should step down.
What is the core reason why groups like yours are organizing these farmers to demand fertilizers from the government?
Over 70% of the population year in, year out depends on subsistence farming. They need to grow maize, sell some surplus, and feed their families the rest. Now, what is happening is President Lazarus Chakwera is waging war on these farming families. Now, to avert that war, we are mobilizing the farmers starting from Monday, the 9th of January 2023. They will be holding vigils, endless vigils, at all the district commissioners across the country. We have 28 district councils, so the farmers will be gathering there up until such a time when the fertilizer will be made available to them. Because it doesn't make sense whatsoever that parliament can set aside also sums of money amounting to 188 billion, and the government at this hour has not money to buy the commodity which is sought after. So we think that this is the time that the farming community themselves, that are a majority, they should defend themselves from the impending hunger. This government is clearly manufacturing hunger which is going to affect millions of the people.
But Namiwa, you cannot say that the government is manufacturing hunger. There are challenges, economic challenges that all countries are facing with external shocks and all that. And the government has asked for patience as policies implemented take effect in order to, you know, improve living conditions and supply the fertilizers to the farmers. Why are you not giving the government a little bit of time to address some of these challenges?
Ours is a self-made crisis. You remember the 750 million kwacha that was paid to a butcher in the UK? Have you ever heard that butchers elsewhere are selling fertilizer? Up to this very hour, despite an assurance that the money is going to be paid back, we heard that some two traceable lawyers paid back the money. You see, the money that was paid in a foreign exchange, the much needed foreign exchange, someone had the audacity to pay back in a local currency, a local bank in Blantyre, despite having a fully fledged financial intelligence authority and the money laundering laws in place. This dubious and shameless transaction never raised the red flag. As I'm talking to you now, these lawyers are walking scot-free. This is impunity of highest order. At the same time, it is what we're calling manufacturing hunger. It is waging war on the poor people that year in, year out, their lives depend on agriculture. So, you see, our case has nothing to do with what we're talking about, the crisis the world is facing. It is the poor leadership. At best, it's like we have got a leader that has abdicated his power. He has surrendered his power, his constitutional power, to unknown individuals, to an extent that he's not aware of what is happening within the presidency, what is happening within the country. So ours is poor leadership, nothing else.
Sylvester Namiwa is the executive director for the Center for Democracy Economic Development Initiatives. He spoke with me from the Malawian capital, Lilongwe. Seretse Khama Ian Khama, the exiled former president of Botswana, says he will challenge a court-issued warrant for his arrest. The court has charged him with illegal possession of firearms and money laundering. The former president says it's unconstitutional and politically motivated, a move to prevent him from participating in next year's general election. He said it's also an effort to harass and intimidate his family and close allies. Khama is a patron of the main opposition Botswana Patriotic Front. He backed the group after leaving the governing Botswana Democratic Party, which he led to win two terms in office. This following disagreements with current President Mokgweetsi Masisi. Here is the concluding part of the conversation with former President Khama over the court-issued warrant. Well, some people are saying that it is not true that the charges are politically motivated, as you have said in the past, and that not being present in Botswana gives the impression that you are running away from justice, Mr. President.
No, it's not a matter of justice. Let me emphasize that. Like I say, I am, you know, okay, if I'm running away from justice, let them issue the extradition request for me to return. Let them do that. They haven't done that. And I would welcome that if they did that, because then I would have an opportunity in a foreign court here in South Africa to prove my case. The issue is, I'm not about to commit suicide. I'm not just going to throw myself to the wolves. And when there have been all these attempts of my life, allow myself to go back to the country right now and allow them to do what they wanted to do. And they will be endeavoring, they will be bending over backwards to try and make it look like an accident. Like I said, even the United Nations confronted them about these attempts on my life. So it's not being made up. It's a fact. The proof is there.
So, Mr. President, before you go, what is the next line of action from you? Based on this information that you're getting, for some of us here, we are hearing all these stories that
the arrest warrant is a first step. Some analysts say it's a first step for the authorities to begin the extradition process. So they bring you back to Botswana to face the judiciary or go through the legal process. What say you, Mr. President?
No, like I said to you, going back and appearing in a court of law in Botswana or here in South Africa is not an issue. Nobody in our country in the past has ever had a problem in after being summoned, because I just want to say to you, I have not been served with a summons to appear in court. And that is the first step. If you don't appear in court after receiving a summons, then the magistrate or the high court judge will order your arrest. But they put the cart before the horse in that they go for the arrest for the reason that I gave you. So that is the issue at hand. And that is what my lawyers are going to be challenging before them. So like I said, I'm not a back when I know there have been attempts. Who would do that? I mean, honestly, who would know knowingly when I have said I'm going to do everything in my power to ensure that this man who has betrayed his oath of office, who has betrayed democracy in Botswana, the rule of law, I would, you know, has betrayed the people and is prepared to go to the extent that I have explained to you of coming up with trumped up charges, which have been proven. And I've been winning court cases in recent times. I've been winning court cases, two cases recently in the Court of Appeal, the highest court in the land. So I've been represented in court by my lawyers and they've been going. So it's not that I'm running away from justice. Every single court case I have been there or I've been represented.
Serete Kama, Ian Kama is a former Botswana president. He spoke with me from South Africa. In Zambia, a women's advocacy group is calling on the government to appoint more women in leadership decision-making positions in the administration. The Zambia National Women's Lobby says it is an affront to the constitution for the government not to implement a provision which calls for women to make up half of all public bodies. The remarks come following a review of women in leadership. The findings show that women make up only 14% parliamentarians, 7.6% of councillors, about 13% of mayors and council chairpersons, and almost 18% of cabinet positions. For more on the findings, I reach Harriet Chibuta. She is the executive director at the Zambia National Women's Lobby.
The year 2022 continued having less representation of women in leadership in Zambia. If you look at the country, we have signed a lot of protocols, international laws that compel member states to have 50% representation. But if you look at Zambia, we are still very far. Right now in parliament, we just have about 14%. At local government, we only have about 7%. And even in cabinet itself, the numbers are very low. So we hope that this coming year, in 2023, we'll see more women being appointed to higher positions, and we'll see more efforts being made by government to ensure that women are participating. Because women are the majority in the country, they are the majority voters, and also when the situation is like that, we need to have more women on the decision-making table.
A lot of people are saying there has been some progress. Recently, Ms. Mwangala Zulumi's was named as the chairperson of the Electoral Commission of Zambia, and the election of Miss Cynthia Makungu as ward councillor for Mbereshi. You have a vice president who is also a woman. So there has been progress, and that credit must be given to where it is due when, you know, significant steps have been taken such as this. How do you respond to that?
You see, we have women at certain higher decision-making positions, like, for example, the vice president, the speaker, the National Assembly, and Electoral Commission of Zambia. But still, when it comes to the majority of women in decision-making powers, we still have very low numbers. Our constitution is very clear at 4259, compels the appointing authority to ensure that there is equal representation of men and women, but still that does not happen. So, for example, when nominations are being made at parliamentary level, where eight people are supposed to be appointed, so four, according to our constitution, four are supposed to be women, four are supposed to be men. But if you look at the nominations, we only have two women that were appointed and six men were appointed. So what we say is that where we are supposed to have more women, to have women appointed, I think let's follow our constitution, because we already have more men in leadership. So why appoint more men when we need to have more women? So that's where our argument has been. Yes, we can have a female vice president, but if she's been at a decision table where the majority are men, what's the point?
Have you officially petitioned this new dawn government about these concerns of women decision makers going down under this current administration?
We've done that. We've written to the president. We have the women's movement. Immediately turning to government, we went to see him. We have done that. And that's why we continue speaking, so that the situation does not continue getting worse. We continue speaking and we continue reminding, so that the situation changes and we follow our laws, because our laws are very clear.
Some people are suggesting that perhaps you should go to court if what is currently being done does not meet the requirement of the constitution, that it has to be equal women representation.
What has been done? If you are following the legal proceedings in 2021, the women's movement actually took the government to court. And, the ruling was not so good, so it has been appealed and it's been taken to a higher court. Well, that route has already been done. But, you know, the government was taken to court, but the court ruled in favor of a government.
Harriet Chibuta is the executive director at the Zambian National Women's Lobby. She spoke with me from Chongwe, just outside the capital, Lusaka.
Direct from Washington, the voice of America, VOA.
As Nigeria edges closer to elections on February 25, that will replace President Muhammadu Buhari, youth advocates are calling on the Independent National Electoral Commission, or INEC, to help the disabled community cast their ballot. For more, my colleague Mike Hovey spoke to Rachel Enigbedion, a disability rights advocate.
One of the things I see about the young persons in Nigeria going towards election is their desire to see change. Talking about change in infrastructure, you know, employment, there's so many amenities that are just lacking behind.
Typically, when we look at the entire continent, when election season edges closer, I tend to like to focus on the disabled community. They face a range of challenges across the continent, especially towards election season. Talk to me about that, the disabled community in Nigeria.
There was a seminar that was around the mainstreaming of Nigerians with disability, was conducted by the Independent National Electoral Commission chairman. And then he talked about the estimation of the number of youths we have in Nigeria. And there, no doubt, were almost 13 million persons. And then Nigeria became the first country in Africa where persons with disabilities in their own right observed elections, beginning with two states, Edo State and Ondo State. Mm-hmm. Now, that historical, you know, move or shift that happened years back enabled the, you know, INEC to think around how the disability votes matter. And a lot still needs to be done because the electoral act needs to go beyond its theoretical form to implementation. And that means persons with disability needs to be at the core front of the electoral observation, as well as becoming electoral voters. They need to as well vote. Mm-hmm. So there's this protocol known as the African Disability Protocol, and it's the protocol to the African Charter on Human and People's Rights on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities in Africa. Now, that protocol has an article called, ensuring that persons with disabilities are able to participate in politics. And currently, Nigeria has not ratified that protocol.
How catering have the elections been for the disabled community? Here I'm talking about things like Braille, etc., etc.
It's in the progress because, like I mentioned, there's some organizations like the Inclusive Friends for Association, all of these people coming together to ensure that, you know, the angle you've mentioned, Braille, you know, sign language interpreters, mm-hmm. you know, there's accessible and friendly disability formats for people to vote and their voices to be heard. However, it's not been as progressive as it should be. But I have some recommendations I can share. So I would say that INEC needs to undertake a survey. That's the first thing for me. That survey is what will enable them to have data to understand most of the inaccessible polling locations and try to relocate or make them accessible.
Well, as we wrap up here, Rachel, I want to focus on the disabled community themselves. What words would you have for them to encourage them to be part of this entire process?
People always ask me this question. Rachel, you're not disabled. You don't have a hidden disability. You don't have a family with disability. Why are you so passionate about this work? You know, that question comes all the time. And my response is, I don't need to be disabled for me to feel what they feel. And I think that's the whole point of empathy. People may not be empathetic to you, but you need to be empathetic to yourself. And that means you need to give yourself a pat on the back and tell yourself that I believe in me. And then if you have the competency, go for it.
That was Rachel Inigbedion, a Nigerian disability rights advocate. She spoke to my colleague Mike Hovey via Skype. In Tanzania, two main opposition parties have announced dates to launch political rallies across the country. This after President Samia Suluhu Hassan met with 19 registered political parties and lifted the ban on rallies imposed by her predecessor, deceased President John Magufuli. The opposition Civic United Front, or CUF, was the first major party to announce their rallies beginning Saturday. The main opposition party, Chadema, says its nationwide rallies will begin on January 21st. However, both groups welcomed the timing of the move, adding it allows them to attract support in the run-up to next year's local elections. Meanwhile, the police also say they are prepared to manage the gatherings, a sharp departure from previous complaints that the law enforcement agency is used to intimidate and harass opponents of the administration. For the latest political developments, I reach Faraja Lugume, a lecturer at the University of Dar es Salaam.
The political parties have welcomed that lifting of the ban with a very positive reaction, with a positive mood, and they say it has come at the right time because now the political parties will go for the rallies as they prepare for the local government elections next year, 2024, and for the general elections in 2025. Immediately after the announcement of the lifting of the ban, the main opposition party, Chadema, Chama cha Demokrasia na Maendeleo, Chadema, announced to organize political rallies all over the country. And the Civic United Front also followed suit. They said that it is the right time for them now to mobilize the followers, because for a long time they couldn't meet the followers, they couldn't recruit new members of their parties.
The police service has also said that it is ready to manage gatherings that will be slated by all political parties in the country. A different posture by the police service. Is this a change of attitude following the lifting of the ban by the president? Are they following, is the police service following the directive of the president?
The police army or the police officers in our country for many years have been blamed for suppressing the opposition parties. Even sometimes when there's no any justification or any justifiable reason for them to stop the opposition politicians to organize rallies, they would always say they are not allowed. And that has been a concern for many years. Even if you can recall the former president, Jakaya Mrisho Kikwete, in one of the internal meetings within his party, warned the members that they should stop depending on the police to make them continue enjoying the leadership in our country. Rather, he argued his fellow CCM members to do politics using arguments, or to strongly counter the arguments from the opposition rather than using the, or rather than relying on the police support. And that has been a concern for many years.
Faraja, opposition groups complained during the former president's term in office before he passed away that the imposition of the ban on rallies gave undue advantage to the Chama Cha Mapinduzi party. With the lifting of this ban, do you see any significant challenge that these opposition groups would give to the ruling party ahead of the next general election?
Peter, first of all, before I respond to your question, we should understand that there are two situations we can analyze here. The first one was in 2015, when the opposition parties were so powerful that threatened President Magufuli, the one who passed away 2 years past. In 2015, Magufuli faced a stiff competition from the opposition parties. I think it is based on that background, Magufuli didn't want to allow the opposition parties to compete with him fairly in 2020. And that's why after he entered into power in 2016, he announced the ban on political rallies, and it is from 2016 we couldn't see political the opposition parties organizing any rally anymore, and so they suffocated politically, and that's why when they went for the elections in 2020, they were frail, they were weak, they were disorganized, they had no opportunity to express their policies to the potential voters. And that's why this time we expect a fair ground of doing politics for the ruling party CCM, even for the opposition parties. Now, back to your question. Yes, it's true that the ruling party will suffer a bit. They will suffer from the competition that will be that will come from the opposition parties.
Faraja Lugume is a lecturer at the University of Dar es Salaam. He spoke with me from the Tanzanian commercial capital, Dar es Salaam. This
This is the Voice of America, and you are listening to Nightline Africa. I'm your host, Peter Clotte, in Washington. Coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa Sports with Samson O'Malley, and that will be followed by a commentary by Dr. James Jonah, former UN Under-Secretary General for Political Affairs and Music from our African collection. But first, it's now time for Nightline Africa Sports, and for that, let's join Samson O'Malley. Hello, Samson.
Hi, Peter, and good evening, sports fans. Welcome to Nightline Africa Sports. The seventh edition of the 2022 African Nations Championship will begin this Friday in Algeria. For the first time in the history of the championship, 18 countries will be competing for the title, an increase from the previous 16 nations. The biennial football tournament, organized by the Confederation of African Football for national teams on the continent, is meant for players currently playing in their respective local leagues. Ahead of the tournament kickoff on Friday, the Black Galaxies of Ghana played out a goalless draw with Algeria in a friendly game on Saturday. Captain of the Black Galaxies, Gladsin Awako, says they are ready to make their country proud at the championship.
We've had a couple of games, and I think when you compare from to the two games we played in Egypt, I think the performance has been very good, and each and everyone is coping, each and everyone is cooperating well, and the technical team too are doing all they can to make sure that we get to the level that they want, and the level that we can get ready to for the tournament.
Staying with football news, Olympic Lyon midfielder Hussein Amoah has switched allegiances, dumping France to play for Algeria. The announcement was made by the head of Algeria's Football Federation. The 24-year-old made his France debut against Ukraine at the Stade de France, picking up 2 assists on his first and only start, but he failed to make Deschamps' France squad for the Euro 2020 and the 2022 World Cup in Qatar. And now to athletics. Kenya has revealed plans to bid for the 2029 World Athletics Championships after missing out on the 2025 hosting rights last year. Sports Minister Abadu Nawamba has confirmed Kenya's intent to become the first African nation to stage the event as the country looks to play host in 6 years' time. Nawamba's announcement came during the World Athletics President Sebastian Coe's visit to Kenyan capital Nairobi last week. In tennis news, Tunisian world number 2, Ons Jabeur, suffered a shock 6-3 defeat by Czech 18-year-old world number 102 Linda Naskova in the Adelaide International Semifinals. Czech teenager Naskova will now play world number 5 Arina Sabalenka in Sunday's decider, her first ever final at the Adelaide International, in a setback for the Tunisian ahead of the Australian Open. Tunisian Jabeur had treatment on a lower back problem at 2-5 in the first set, but she bounced back to easily take the second before struggling in the third. In basketball news, the last 4 tickets still available for African countries for the 2023 FIBA Basketball World Cup will be determined in February in Angola and Egypt when the two nations host the last games of Group E and F. And that's all for this week's edition of Nightline Africa Sports. Back to you, Peter.
Thanks a lot, Samson. It's always a pleasure to hear from you. We'll link up with you again next Sunday for another look at African sports. Nightline Africa Sports. Now let's take a closer look at Africa, the problems, the prospect in time of conflict, in time of peace. Here's one man's point of view with Dr. James Jonah, former UN Under-Secretary General for Political Affairs. Hello, Dr. Jonah.
Good evening, Africa. Currently, some Western countries are raising grave doubts about what they considered the proliferation of Russian private military companies on the African continent. Specifically, they are referring to the Wagner Group, which is currently operating in Mali, Central Africa, and are emerging as a major force in Burkina Faso. But Wagner Group is not the first private military company on the African continent. The concept of a private military company emerged at the time of the civil war in Sierra Leone, when the NPRC government engaged what was called the executive outcome of South Africa to cooperate with it in its fight against the Revolutionary United Front, RUF. That type of company became more important during the Iraq War, when a United States private military company, Blackwater, was formed first to deal mainly with logistic matters, but also get engaged in combat in Iraq. The South African government of the non-apartheid regime passed a law forbidding any private military company to be formed in the country. So in the circumstances, one has to take into account the OAU, Organization of African Unity Resolution, which was passed during the hot period of the Cold War. It asked all of its members not to allow the stationing of military bases on their territory. That resolution was largely complied with many countries, although in some instances, for example, in some Francophone countries, it was difficult to know what is and what is not a military base. But then the Africans made a point of raising that issue when AFRICOM, United Nations military force to deal in Africa, and the Africans did not allow the United States to deploy that on the African continent. Former President George Bush, in a visit to Ghana, pledged the U.S. will not do so, and AFRICOM is now, the headquarters is now deployed outside of the country. But there's also new development which may become very relevant. Few weeks ago, the Court of Justice, the United Nations Court of Justice, ruled that the islands in the central Indian Ocean belong really to Mauritius and not to the UK, and that the UK should return those islands to Mauritius. Initially, the UK could not say whether it will comply with the International Court of Justice ruling. But last week, there were reports that the United Kingdom was prepared to hand over all those islands, the largest of which is Dioxacia, to Mauritius on the condition that Mauritius should sign an agreement with the United States to maintain the large United States base in Dioxacia because of his strategic position in the central Indian Ocean. And if it, when he had done that, the whole situation will be solved and it will be returned to Mauritius. If this is allowed, then it will be similar to what the United Kingdom did in Cyprus. When Cyprus was being granted independence, the British government signed an agreement with the Republic of Cyprus to establish on the island two sovereign bases, which are still in force, again, a testimony to the strategic location of the island. So should Mauritius agree to what the British government wants, the model is already with Cyprus. In the circumstances, the African Union may want to revisit what was adopted by the OAU. What is the view of the African Union now in terms of establishing of foreign military bases on African soil? This is very essential at this time to draw the line and know what should be accepted and not accepted on the military and the African continent. I thank you.
That was One Man's Point of View, a commentary by Dr. James Jonah, former UN Under Secretary General for Political Affairs. It's Sunday on Nightline Africa, and this is the time we get to relax and reflect, a flashback with music from the continent.
Breaking the law. Anything about the money, I'm getting involved. They told me not to dream big. This thing is bigger than dreams. 10 10 story building, we talking a couple beams. Tough skin, go get the money by any means. My mama motivation, my master be posting memes. Time changes from Subin to Wabi Road. Who they want time, me be in the carry load. See, can I buy my jet diamond and Sanji gold? Little boy with some money, you know how the story goes.
My future I don't see from my love. No, but you got tell me how I could protect. Try and love fast and all it takes. So I can not play good at all it pay. You see me in my way, don't be my money. Tell you to switch it if you come my way.
Running out of things to prove myself. Way too busy winning, I'ma lose myself. Every day they go hit on us. Mama says she gon' pray for us. Cause I can't do it on my own. You that godly, special somebody I know. You beside me, turn this house into a home. Give me one good reason why unions are so. Yo. Caught up in the matrix, looking for love in the wrong places. Cover the front page on a Sunday when they discover a location. Top of the combination. All I need is a little patience. Takes guts to break up, key to make up this foundation. Talking about real life, where you do the right thing and it still don't feel right. Set the bar real high. You done broke your heart, but you got a zero chill type. Why you gotta be like this every single time? When I leave my crib, but you ain't got a problem spending the cheese like it. Yeah. How many breakups we gon' have? You even made me a plate when I pull up at your place to bring a dish back. Even my ex call me a big fan. Give me your time frame, I got big plans. But I don't buy face, I buy sick bags. Jet lag and smoke zigzags. The right way, then play this back. Running out of things, I can prove myself. I'ma lose myself. Every day they go hit on us. Mama says she gon' pray for us. Cause I can't do it on my own. You that godly, special somebody I know. You beside me, turn this house into a home. Give me one good reason why unions are so. I wanted you for a long time. Couple years later, now you're all mine. Star sign. Don't give me the cold shoulder like frostbite. Keep it outside. X6 got four bites. Go six, that's smoke fright. They need an angle for their website. But we just living our best life. Gold chains tangled on my chest like. We show up at the thing, you get the check right. Way too independent for your own good. Maybe that's the reason we started the season up on the wrong foot. Had to be strong, even your mom would. Recommend reading the Lord's book. I need 100%, this is the last push. I just wanna jog your memory. Case you forgot, I fought you and me. Paid the cost to follow our heart's energies. Now all of a sudden my chick wanna leave. All of our fans is gon' grieve. All of our haters is gon' preach. Running out of things, I can prove myself. I'ma lose myself. Every day they go hit on us. Mama says she gon' pray for us. Cause I can't do it on my own. You that godly, that you somebody I know. You beside me, turn this house into a home. Give me one good reason why I never sold you.
That was our Sunday Music Spot. Hope you enjoy the music from Nightline Africa here at the English service of the Voice of America in Washington. Nightline Africa comes to you from the English service of the Voice of America. Hope you enjoy the program tonight. As you know by now, we are on air on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC. From the Nightline Africa team, including producer Mike Harvey, we say thanks for joining us. And remember, as the elders say, A fully grown tree cannot be bent into a walking stick. I'm your host, Peter Clote, in Washington. Good evening, Africa.